Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a New Day radio show where the dialogue is authentic, host is passionate, and we help you to become empowered, inspired, resilient, and transformed. Yes, our focus is to change our world by transforming one business and one life at a time. Now, here is your host, author, columnist, reinvention coach, entrepreneur, teacher, and speaker, Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and I must apologize for Sunday. We were not able to get on the show past Sunday. We were having some technical difficulties, and I'm so excited that that has been resolved, and we are ready to rock and roll. This morning, we only have one guest who will be spending the entire 2 hours with us this morning. And he's been hanging out with me for the greater portion of the morning in the virtual green room, and I'm going to bring him on live. However, before we do that, I want to play our theme song. And I need to find it now. I was not able to see my dashboard. Now I'm seeing it, so we are in business with our chat room. So, we are ready to rock and roll.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind, you're looking for love, but found the blues. That's why I've come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I wanna be more than just somebody. I wanna be more than just a friend. I want to be more than someone special, 'cause special friends sometimes they won't understand.
Well, I tell you, in Connecticut, where I am broadcasting from, we're having lots and lots of snow, and the news casters has been saying that the snow is turning into ice. So for those of you who are on the streets out there and probably listening on your iPhone or something, please be careful. And if you don't need to go out, don't go out. For those of you who have the privilege of working from home, please do that and let us just keep everybody safe and sound. So that's just a little advice from me. And before we go, okay, I want to thank the tech people at Blog Talk for fixing my chat. Now I can see my chat room. Thank you guys very much. I like an efficient help. So thank you guys. I appreciate it. I want to invite you to join me on Twitter at Dynamic Daphne. And on Facebook, also at Dynamic Daphne. On LinkedIn, I'm at Daphne Clark Hudson. And I have a new written blog. It is Dynamic Daphne on dot wordpress.com. Dynamic Daphne on .wordpress.com. So check me out there. If you are interested in being a guest blogger on my written blog, my website is all transformed. So let me hear from you there. And you all remember that we are working towards getting a cruise to raise some money for the breakfast feeding program at the Carmel School in Jamaica, West Indies. And this cruise is scheduled for the 14th of June. Port of call is Barcelona, Spain. And it's an 8-day cruise. And we are looking for your support. It is on the Norwegian Epic. And please, if you would reach out to our cruise consultant, Todd Olinda Begg. Her telephone numbers are 203-538-0094 or 203-818-3174. You can also email her at olindabegg, O-L-I-N-D-A-B-E-G-G, at AO. Time is coming up in another 5 days is the deadline for you to reserve your cabins for the discounted rate of $250. That's what you need to use to secure your cabin, and then she'll tell you when you need to pay the rest of the money by. The cabins will be available at the hour they will be back into the regular inventory and will be sold at the regular price versus the discount price of the cruise. So this helps us. Our goal is to start feeding those kids a hot breakfast when school starts again back in September. So please help us help those children. Okay, and please, our chat room is up, so I'm excited about that. And you may also call in of this amazing conversation that is about to take place. We are going to be speaking a lot about investing with insight and knowledge. Because as entrepreneurs, a lot of us, we are not doing that for different reasons. We are always thinking we don't have enough money. However, I don't think money is the issue. I think the issue is information and knowledge, and we don't know where to start. And that's why I have my honored guest on this morning. And before I bring him on this morning, I want to tell you he's joining us out of Panama. Yes, I was going to say out of Hawaii, but no, he's out of Panama. And his name is Mr. Sidney Tremaine, and he was born in England, and he lived there for 26 years out of his amazing life, and he has moved around. He had then lived in Canada for 43 years. And then I'm going to let Sydney, which is my new friend, I'm going to bring Sydney on live, and I'm going to let him tell you everything about him. As a matter of fact, you all know that I am always singing the praises of multimedia and also the social media and all those aspects, because although Sydney and I have never met in person, we met about two or three weeks we met, and it is as if we have known each other for a lifetime. So I want to just introduce to you, my listeners, Mr. Sydney Tremaine. Good morning, Sydney.
Good morning, Daphne. I was listening to what you were saying about your weather there in Connecticut and sympathizing. Here there is a bright blue sky with some fluffy clouds, and the weather is just wonderful. And I really sympathize because I used to live in those snowy, icy conditions.
Oh, you know, well, I appreciate you not bragging, because normally when I have guests on who is experiencing such magnificent weather, they like just carve it in. They just carve it inside. So thank you for being gentle with the rest of us, Sydney.
Well, you know, no place is paradise.
That's right. That's right. That's
not
why
on this earth, anyway.
That's right. And we need to just take wherever we are, wherever we woke up this morning, the mere fact that we woke up, it's enough to be happy about and just give thanks for whatever situation.
Here's what you can be thankful for, Daphne. When you're having summer and enjoying the nice sunshine and the warmth, here we're enduring rain, heavy rain, tropical rain. So,
and
you know, we each get the sunshine.
That's right. That's right. I want to welcome guest 282 to the show. So, Sydney, let us get into, well, thanks for being my new friend. I tell you something. They say be careful what you ask for in the world, because God has a way of just delivering what we ask for, and sometimes even more than we ask for. This year, I went into this year asking God to provide me with new people that understand about the work I do. And I must be honest to you, the first day you and I spoke on Skype, it was as if I've known you my lifetime. So thank you for what you do and for who you are and for setting time aside to be on this show this morning.
Well, Daphne, I have to thank you for being you. I admire what you're doing, and I'm delighted to have started to get to know you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, let us start at the beginning about this little English prince that came into this world many, many, many years ago. Let us start from the beginning. Who is Sydney Tremaine?
Oh, do you think that after 80 years, you know, my birthday was yesterday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. I forgot.
Thank you, Daphne. You would think that after 80 years I would know who Sydney Tremaine is, and I'm not really sure yet. I wonder if any of us really are sure of who we are. I think I'm one of the good guys now. I wasn't always, but that comes along with age and a few other things. You ask where I began. I was born in South Yorkshire in a place called Selby in England. My father was a journalist. I became a journalist eventually. But there isn't a lot to tell about the beginning. I eventually learned that I was part of a dysfunctional family, but that happens to many people. My parents, during the war, I lived 10 miles south of the center of London. So I saw, as a small child, saw all kinds of crazy things happening, fighter planes fighting each other, things like that, that I could see out of my bedroom window. And by the time the war finished, my family, my parents had split up. And again, that happens to lots of people. So My beginnings are nothing special. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would tell you that I am nothing special. Everybody is special in their own way. Okay. But What I do now, people look at with some awe. But you know, I think that I'm just the messenger. I'm like the saw. The saw doesn't cut a piece of wood by itself.
That's right.
I'm like that.
That's right. And you know, Sydney, I hope people understand why I am super excited about this segment today, because how many people in their lifetime can say they have an opportunity to get into a 2 hours dialogue with a gentleman who is still creating legacies in this world? Not too many. And this is why I call myself honored this morning to be here with you. And I know you are such a humble man. And as a matter of fact, I got to be honest, I must tell the listeners that Sydney is not very comfortable speaking much about himself, because he has lived his entire life writing about others and speaking about others. So every opportunity he gets to speak about himself, he like work around it and make sure he points it in another direction. However, I'm going to do my best this morning to get my new friend to just like talk a little about his journey. So yes, you followed in your father's footsteps, and you too became a journalist. And that path took you to many different regions across our world. Would you love to talk about your life as a journalist?
Well, I started off, of course, in England, and on a small weekly paper in Yorkshire. And I worked on several magazines after that. I was editor of a few trade magazines. I left England in 1960 when I was recruited by a newspaper in Canada to be the regional correspondent in a certain part of Nova Scotia, in the very eastern part of Canada. And that was a fabulous job. I was left alone to dig out whatever news I could dig out. And I was there for about 3 years, 3 or 4 years, and went to Toronto, again, editing magazines, two of them. And that company got sold to another company, and I found myself about to be out of work. And I called a newspaper, the Winnipeg Free Press, in Western Canada. And there's a story to that. When I was still in England, I got a letter from the Winnipeg Free Press that said I was looking for a job at that time to come from England to Canada. And I got a letter back from the editor who said, if ever you are passing through, now, I mean, this is 5,000 miles away from where I live, mm-hmm. and care to drop in, we'd be pleased to see you.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. So I reminded them of this comment, which was, I assume they were amused too.
Yes.
And sure enough, they invited me to come out there as one of their editors. And so I did that. I did that for a while, mm-hmm. and wrote a column at the same time about people. We've got, mm-hmm. It was called That's People. And you know, the story behind that is that everybody has a story to tell. Everybody,
Sydney. If we would exit the show this morning on this note, it would have added value to people's lives, because we all have a story. And this is
Absolutely.
why it is not difficult to be an entrepreneur. It doesn't matter what we are doing so long as we tell our story, because our stories are part of who we are, and that is what helps us to build our successes. So if we would stop paying so much attention on the competition and what other people are doing and just carve our story and just tell it, it doesn't matter what audience you are before, you can tell your story and reach their heart. So, you know, I am so honored that you share that. Yeah.
If you meet somebody in the street and start to talk with them, you are going to tell your story, and the other person can tell theirs. That's how you get to know each other.
That's right.
And sometimes those stories are sad. Sometimes they're happy. Sometimes they're exciting. Sometimes maybe they're boring. But we have a story.
Each has a story, and there is a lesson there, yes.
And everybody. I mean, I interviewed one time a man who was a hobo. He traveled from one city to another, and somebody could say of such a person that, well, he was a waste. He didn't do anything. He didn't contribute. But he lived his life his way. Whether it was good or bad is not for me to say.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about his experiences as he went from one place to another. And I can tell you, I would sooner not be in his shoes by a long shot. But that's what he chose.
Yes. That's his journey.
It was his journey. I talked to a woman who was blind, and she told me, she talked to me about color.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does a blind person understand color? And
she
how do they tell which...
She saw it through her spiritual eyes, yes.
I don't remember what she said about that. But apparently it was possible for her to tell the difference between a $5 bill and a $10 bill.
Wow.
I talked
to...
I talked to a little person. You know, they don't like to be called what they used to be called, midgets, but they are little people.
Well, how does
a little person go shopping in a
regular
department store? Exactly, where the goods are displayed above their heads. You know, there were men, everybody had a story.
Everybody have a story. We all have our story, Sydney. I tell you, you and I can be on this radio show for another 2 years talking about that, because that is such a powerful statement. We all have a story. We all have a story. So you were born
in... And from those stories, we can learn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can learn positive things, or we can learn what to avoid.
Mm-hmm. And we can learn... some people have chose not to learn anything either and keep going around in the same circle for a long time. And you were born in England... And you went into the neighborhood in Canada, just, you know how people park up. I just rang your bell because I was in the neighborhood, and that one worked out for you. However, you also went some other places. You weren't just settling there in Canada. You got excited. You went to other places.
Well, somebody joined the staff of the Winnipeg Free Press while I was there, and he had been in Africa, and he knew some, he had some, I think he'd been in Africa, or at least he had some contacts, and I got curious. I was adventurous, I was still young, and I finished up becoming assistant editor of the Daily Nation in Nairobi, and that was another quite unusual experience. Nairobi still has a place in my heart. It was a wonderful place to be. It was still influenced by the British. in, I think, a negative way, in a sort of colonial way. The British behaved in some senses, I think, badly. And I was there at that time for a year, and there was a problem with the paper didn't honor its contract, and so I called it quits after a year. But I went back. When I traveled back to Winnipeg, but not to the Free Press, to the opposition newspaper, and had a great time there for a while. And that was a part of a chain of daily newspapers across Canada. And at that point, there had been no Canadian correspondent in Africa. And I campaigned to change that and become that first correspondent. And I did. It was not easy. I went over, I would say, on my own finances, except that it wasn't really that bad because the paper that I worked for continued to pay me. All of the papers in the chain paid me for whatever I wrote and that they published, and they published quite a bit. The Canadian Air Force asked me to do a story on the first six pilots who qualified to be pilots in Tanzania who were trained in Canada. So the Canadian Air Force took me as far as Germany, and I had to make my own way from there. So, you know, it was, that was an experience in it, just in itself, getting there.
It is beautiful.
While I was there, I'm a very competitive person. And so I would do things that other people sometimes wouldn't do. I was the first, according to what I heard, I was the first white journalist to travel on what was then known as Hell Run. It was the dirt road from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania to Lusaka in what was then Northern Rhodesia. And that was a trip of several days.
Wow.
Initially in a Volkswagen, and why a Volkswagen? They are virtually airtight.
Yes.
When I talked about a dirt road, I'm talking about Murrum dust. Murrum,
I know that.
You know about
Jamaica.
It?
Yep, I'm from Jamaica. I know about those stuff.
Okay, and when a car goes along the road, it's so the dust hangs there for about 20 minutes.
All the way up. Yes, like big clouds.
Yes. So this Volkswagen was a man who rode herd on a fleet of trucks, making sure that they weren't carrying passengers, for example, or if they had trouble on the road, you know, he would get the help. He told me of one man who was stuck in his cab of his truck for 24 hours while a bull elephant was really angry and would have attacked him if he'd come out of the truck. He was stuck in the truck. We stopped at a service station just outside, and this was in the middle of the night, just outside a national park. And the driver said that he didn't know whether there was an attendant still there or not because he'd been through a few weeks earlier. And the then attendant had come out to fill the car with gas, and a tiger had jumped at him. Now, fortunately, there were some oil drums in the way, and the man managed to get into his little glass office or box or whatever, you know, where he would stay normally if there weren't customers there. He managed to get in there and shut the door and escape the tiger. The next week that the driver was there, he said there was no attendance. The gas station was closed at that time.
Wow.
Now, when we stopped, there was an attendant. But, you know, things like that. We passed through a place along what is known as the Ruaha Escarpment.
What is that?
It's a great big rift in the land where tectonic plates had separated. So there's a cliff that drops, I don't know how far. I mean, it's deep. It's a deep gash in the earth. It covers a great stretch in Kenya and in Tanzania. And the drop, cattle down at the bottom of this thing looked as if they were little pinheads. You know, they were tiny little
ticks. You're high up. High.
Very high. And this was part of the Great North Run, or Hell Run, as they call it. The Great North Road is its real name.
Beautiful experience.
And at that time, because of the problems in Rhodesia and the fact that Northern Rhodesia wouldn't ship its copper through there, there was transportation between the port in Dar es Salaam and Lusaka of copper one way and gasoline or oil the other way.
Are they trading?
That was because they refused to use the railway that went through southern Rhodesia. And so everything was going by road. The people in Tanzania were familiar enough with twisty roads and, you know, the big trucks and the twisty roads and the hills and everything else. And along one stretch of the Ruaha Escarpment is a very steep hill. And the people from then northern Rhodesia, and you know, I forget what the name is these days, the people from there who were driving very often would lose their brakes or whatever, and they would fall off the side of the road. There was no escape. The road ended at the edge of the road was the beginning of the cliff. And they lost, I think they said something like 20 trucks a month off the...
Oh, my heavens.
And there was nothing they could do about it. They couldn't reclaim the copper or reclaim the truck or anything else.
Wow.
So
And regardless of all that, people kept going. People kept pursuing.
People kept going. Yes,
you
exactly.
You have to pursue.
One of the things I noticed in Kenya at that time among the African population was that the view of life seemed to be very different. Life seemed to have less value. I was wrong, but that's what it seemed to be.
What made you came to that conclusion, Sydney?
Life seemed to be very cheap. Life seemed to be very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I saw things that, you know, you wouldn't normally expect to see. And in some ways, there was a savage attitude toward life in some ways.
In
general.
Some risky. Like, some people are more... willing to do risky thing without thinking of the consequences and just keep going. I think.
But also there were killings which were quite savage.
Yes.
You know.
Wow.
But they were isolated. Remember, I was there in somewhere in the 1960s. I can't exactly remember.
Okay,
that.
So it's a long time, and we know things are very...
This wasn't very far after what they call Uhuru, which is freedom. and the Kikuyu and the uprisings that they had at that time. So there were some pretty violent things that had been going on, and I think that what I saw was some of what was left of that.
Sting, you are a human encyclopedia, man. You are.
I don't think
so. I tell you, I see, we have so much we're going to be talking about here, man. Ooh, I tell you something. You have so much to talk about on this show here. So I want to remind the people who are listening on the phone, yes, you're listening to my honored guest, Mr. Sidney Tremaine. And we started off by him just sharing a richness of his journey. And we are going to be talking about investment in a little bit and some insights from that. And you know, at age 80, I was not going to speak his age, but he mentioned it, so now I will. You have so much to give, and I tell you, I want to get so much for you guys. Sit tight, be warm if you're here in the Northeast, and just hang tight and call in at any time. You can ask Sidney about his life journey. You can ask about investment. You can ask anything. Nothing is off limits here. So I want to get you involved. You can call in 646-915-8166. So Sidney, you started off following in your papa's footstep of being a journalist, traveling the world, doing journalism. When did you decide to make a switch and went into the financial aspect of who you are?
Well, in a sense, I didn't make a switch, although I've made many switches in my life. Mm-hmm. I was in government for a while, not as an elected official, but as an official in government. But that was 11 years that are best forgotten, I think.
I was just going to ask you to expand on that a little now. Would you care to mention a little bit more about being in government, what that was about? If you don't want to, that's okay.
I was in the information business, and in my view, there are far too many people in government in information. really are. The tax people pay, taxpayers pay for these people, and sometimes I think they're not needed. You know, they're frills. Mm-hmm. They are meant to make government look good. And sometimes there is a need for the public to have certain information, but sometimes it's just... it's just frills. It's for the government's conceit. But, I mean, that's me being cynical.
That's a whole nother show too, right?
I misspent 11 years in federal government in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was the director of information in different departments in different regions across the country. Mm-hmm. I get to see a huge amount of the country, including the Arctic. In fact, I was at one point very few miles away from the North Pole, which was an unusual place to be. But to me, that was an interlude in my life. That actually, the way I left is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of a cross country team that put together a policy, or helped to put together a policy, in which non-government organizations would be consulted.
NGOs.
Yes. would be consulted about any significant change in policy from the Environment Department. And sometimes this involved hearings all over the country, different teams. And some months later, I was taken by my director to a safe and given a top secret document.
Wow.
I had the clearance for that. And asked to write a paper as if the subject of the document, and there were three of them, three different things, had not happened, was not in fact law.
Wow.
So it could be a discussion paper. And I said, I went back to my office and I thought for about 5 minutes. In fact, I paced my office. I didn't sit down. And I went back to the director's office and I said, this is crazy. You're asking me to lie and you're going to get found out. Somebody is going to know what you're doing here, And the director sort of shrugged his shoulders and, sort of said,
"Who cares?
Basically, so what?"
Cares?
Which was crazy. I mean, I was responsible for disseminating good information that, regardless of whether it was valuable or not, made the government look good, not made them
look bad.
Look bad, or that they cheated, which is what they were doing.
My God.
So I paced around for another 5 minutes, and I went back to him, and I said, "I quit. That's it."
That's right. Because you have to go with your conscience, And, that speaks volume about who you are.
Well, I mean, that's true. You have to be true to yourself.
To yourself. You can't be true to anybody else but yourself. My God. But that's an insight, Somebody somewhere needed to hear this little piece of information, because we know it has nothing to do with investment, but the spirit doesn't have any information come out that is not valuable. So there's somebody somewhere around the world needed to hear this little piece of information. So if it is you, take it and use it, because that was just some information you were praying to hear, and you didn't know it was going to come through this forum, but you got it this morning. So you said
I
you
don't think
really...
that was I still is public until now.
Yes, yes.
I think this is the first time that's been public.
So that's an affirmation to say it was meant to be out this time. Yes, so we have an hour and 16 minutes remaining in this segment. So, Sydney, as entrepreneurs, we are not investing for different reasons. We say we don't have any money, or investment is only for the rich and all of that. And some aspect of it, yes, is for the rich. But I, just speaking with you briefly, the other day, I learned that there is something for everybody, but we cannot choose where we belong because we don't know. We don't have the information. So where do we begin?
Well, I'll tell you where I began, and it was at the age of 20. So I've been involved with investments. It wasn't a sudden decision. I've been involved with investments in one way or another, professionally or privately, for 60 years, which is about as long as most people ever get to. My first investment, just to show you, none of us know in the beginning how we should be as investors. We're not born with that information or that ability. I was living in a one room, in a rented furnished room, at age 20, in just outside London, and my bank, in which I had £20, which is I don't know what it is today in dollars, probably about $30 or something like that. That was my entire wealth. And I it was in the head, the main branch of the Westminster Bank, which is one of the very large, or was, I don't know if it still exists, one of the very large banking systems in England. And this branch was like a cathedral. It had a cavernous ceiling or roof and brass and polished woods. And, you know, you walked in there, it was almost as if you had to whisper. There was this power in this building. And I called the manager. Now, today, if you tried to call the manager of even a small branch, you'd probably get the secretary or, you know, different gatekeepers. You don't usually get to talk to the manager straight out of the box.
That's right.
I called the manager and got him.
Wow.
And I said, I have some money and I want to invest. What do you suggest? Now, today, having had several bank managers as clients when I was a broker, I know that most bankers don't know very much about investing at all. Anyway, this man said, and in a very English accent, he said, well, there was a gold mine in South Africa that he recommended. Now, a bank manager today would not, I don't think, would, and maybe wouldn't be allowed to recommend a stock. Anyway, so I listened and I said, well, thank you very much. Would you please invest my entire account? And I didn't tell him it was £20 or $30. And he said,
sure.
So he said, certainly, sir, in his very, very British accent. And so because it was an obscure South African gold mine, I had to buy a special paper that was quite expensive to see the price every day. And, you know, I'm 20, I'm broke, basically. And so that was quite a big sacrifice. And this thing went up one penny one day and down one penny the next day. And it just, you know, it just stayed where I bought it. And being so new in this game, I thought, well, this isn't the way investing is supposed to be, you know, a month and it's not changed. I should have been thankful it didn't go down.
Right.
So at the end of the month, I called the bank manager again. And I said, this investment doesn't seem to be very good. It's not going anywhere. Please sell my entire holding. Certainly, sir. he never cracked a smile. But
and I bet
he split his sides when I was off the phone. Anyway, that was my first experience. But I'm a stubborn sort of person, and I knew there was more to it than what that first experience was. And I had the knack, and I don't know, I can't do it now, but I had the knack in those days of being able to look at a column of names of companies and pick ones that would be very quickly significant winners. And I don't know how I did it. But eventually I got into some heavier investing and made some fairly serious money sometimes and lost sometimes. I was still learning. And I was, see, when you talk about not knowing what to do, I've been in your shoes. I know what it's like. I know exactly what it's like, and I know what is missing, and I know the fears. I know the agonies. I know the disappointments. I know the frustrations. And that's why I can do what I do today. But I became a stockbroker. I have two bestsellers on investing, or they're out of print now, but the first one was in the mid-1980s. And I was offered, after that, I started a company that put out a newsletter and had somebody build a computer program for me, and these were in the days of almost of steam-driven computers, you know, in the 1980s. So, but when I closed that company, I was offered jobs for six different brokerage firms in the city that I was living in.
Sydney, before you move from want, I want to piggyback on something you mentioned. You mentioned about the book written in the 1980s or that. How relevant is that information today? Has that changed much, or the base rules are just the base rules?
You mean how relevant was the book?
No. In today's economy, and are the information in your book, can we still pick that up and feel it is safe to use those guidelines?
If you could get the book, yes.
Okay.
Because it was, and it surprised me that it was a bestseller. It was about technical analysis, but my own branch of it, my own version of it.
Okay.
And it was what made me as a stockbroker. I became the most successful stockbroker in Eastern Canada quite quickly. I broke records in my rookie year. And that was because what I had discovered worked. My clients averaged a little over 22% annual rate of return. And, of course, that meant that I got lots and lots of clients. And but there were things wrong with the program, and I knew it. It traded too actively. It had, despite the 22% return, it had a number of losses. So it was sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, you know. And that wasn't good enough. And also far too active. That was wonderful for brokers, but it wasn't, it costs money if you're trading in and out.
So, Sydney, what for the non-investors who want to start now, you know, some of us are old, some of us are a little younger and everything. What questions, when we go for that initial meeting to sit with a stockbroker, what information we need to have at hand before we sit down with them? Because you don't know you don't know what you need to know, you know?
You just, you missed what I just said.
Okay.
I said don't sit down with the stockbroker unless you know what you're doing. How do you tell whether the stockbroker is any good if you don't know something about investing? That's the beginning. But let me tell you this. You don't sit down with anybody and ask for advice. Not anybody. Not your best friend, not your neighbor, not your stockbroker. Because what you get are opinions. There is no one who can look into the future and tell you what's going to happen. So any analyst, and I don't care how well qualified they are, does not have the ability to say this stock will go up or this stock will go up this much. What is essential is that you have a system, because the most people who lose money have done so because they invest by the seat of their pants. They invest on what they believe to be the right thing to do, but believing it. For example, the best time to buy any company is at the bottom of a bear market, the falling market, when the drop has just stopped. And that is when that typically is at the height of a recession. So the newspapers are talking about more plant closing, more people unemployed, Main Street stores are boarded up. You know, everything seems bad.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the professional investors are investing at that time. They are picking up what everybody else is getting rid of in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the same thing happens at the top of the market. The private investor who is investing by the seat of his pants is waiting for assurance that things look rosy and that you know, it's now safe to invest, so he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
But the market has been rising for a considerable period of time, and the stock market is perverse. It waits until everybody is into the train and the train leaves the station full of people to head it for the cliff. I mean, that's too late. People invest too late and they get out too late. And if you listen to the media, if you listen to what people feel about the economy, that is a recipe for disaster. My own systems get in very early and get out, you know, near the top. And that is the difference. There are many systems that will do something similar.
Mm-hmm.
But a system is necessary because going by hunches or feelings or recommendations is a recipe for disaster.
So all these analysts that we see up there on the large networks giving out all this information.
Yeah.
You think they are gathering that information from systems, or as you put it, they're just, you know, giving information from the seat of their pants, as you put it?
What the analysts are doing, they're analyzing balance sheets and analyzing, you know,
mm-hmm.
The cost versus the earnings and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some value to it. I mean, I'm not poo-hooing everything that other people are doing out there, but not by any means.
Right.
So there is value to it, but it's mm-hmm. still guessing at what the future is.
Exactly. So the older we get in life, lucky for those, well, not lucky, but those who are young enough to be listening to the show and getting this information now, they are at a good place, because if they just have $50 like you have and they are getting this information and start with the appropriate system, they too will have a phenomenal, phenomenal story to share someday about it. So
but $50, $50 doesn't get you anywhere today. That's the other thing.
I know, but, you know, just for argument's sake, like you had mentioned, you start where you were, but we know now that things has devalued so much. Stick up in Sydney, get a glass of water, sip of water. Just a word from our sponsor here.
AMD okay. Law Group is an international law practice committed to assisting you in realizing your strategic business goals. Led by Ms. Aurelia Mitchell-Durant, Senior Managing Partner, AMD Law specializes in international business, international intellectual property, and general internet law. We also support organizations in resolving corporate compliance issues. Addressing the legal needs of technology firms and other businesses serving both domestic and international markets, we are uniquely positioned to assist both startups and long-established organizations. Although AMD seeks to proactively avoid litigation wherever possible, we are fully capable and ready to litigate on your behalf. AMD Law Group. Find us online at amdlawgroup.com or contact us at 347-699-4AMD. That's 347-699-4263. Let us help you pursue and protect your dreams.
Again, this is a friendly reminder that on the 10th of February 2014 is your last day to secure your cabin to be on the Norwegian Epic. June of 2014 to be part of the fundraising cruise for the Empower People Foundation, Inc., for the breakfast feeding program at the Carmel School. So to secure your cabin at the discounted rate, you may call Tot or Linda Begg, 203-539-0094 or 203-818-3174. You can also email her at olindabegg@aol.com. Please support us in getting a nutritious hot meal in the stomach of these children. And join us. I am speaking with Mr. Sidney Tremaine, and what a phenomenal journey. What a magnificent insight we have been gathering from this amazing gentleman who celebrated his 80th birthday yesterday. So if you don't have a question, it would be nice to call him and say, happy belated birthday. I'm sure he would love that. The number to call is 646-915-8166. Okay, Sidney, are you still there, my friend?
I'm still here, Daphne.
All right. So we're talking about systems and where you started. And, you know, I am happy to hear you say, don't sit with a stockbroker. And I hope people will take heed to that information and learn where to start and just go there and make something happen. Because honestly and truly, I don't think it is ever too late to start if you are making the right decisions. Yes, you probably won't accumulate the amount, but you can still have something. Yesterday I saw on the news where a lady, a local teacher, I think it was down in South Carolina here in the U.S., died and left $8.4 million to charity. And no one in her little town knew she had all that money. They said she had investments that worked for her that she did not mention anything about. So we never know who our neighbors are, right?
That's often the case, that people have money that surprises other people.
Yes.
But, Daphne, one of the things that prevents people from getting involved in investments, well, there are lots of things. One, of course, is the volatility. But, you know, volatility is not necessarily bad. It's bad if you're on the wrong side of it. But if you have a system, it can take advantage of the volatility. It can be good. But most people think that they need an advanced degree, a master's of business or something, to be able to know enough to invest, because it is apparently so very complicated. But let me tell you what the basis of the systems that I have developed really is. You know that basis, and everybody who is listening to this show knows the basis of the system. Mm-hmm. Stocks go up for a while, and then they go down for a while, mm-hmm. and then they go back up again. Mm-hmm. That is the basis of the system that I have developed. And what I have developed with, a lot of this is coincidence. A lot of, if you believe in coincidences, I frankly don't.
I was going to stop you there. I don't think so. There are no coincidences, you know. But anyhow, go ahead.
And
divine direction.
I believe that there are no coincidences. I mean, there might be the odd one, but not the string of them that I've had. Look, I said in the beginning, I'm nothing special.
You are a channel. You are, Sydney. Not to you, but you are special because you are being used. And you are.
Yes, okay, I'll agree with that. But I have developed a system that tells when the market is going to change from up to down and down to up. And it's that simple. It's that simple to explain to you. It isn't that simple to produce. We've been in development for more than 4 years now. And we have one program that is complete, two that are almost complete, and one in development now.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is automated. We are starting a series of teaching, coaching programs to explain the programs to people who are interested. But then, if they choose to use those programs, everything's automated. It takes just 2 minutes every weekend to look at what the program is saying and inform your broker. And I would suggest discount broker, not full service broker, because you don't need the services. It's that simple. Everything is automated because I know how much. I mean, look, I've been at this game for 60 years. To get to the knowledge I have today. Mm-hmm. And most people don't have 60 years to spend
life
doing that.
Right.
So we've simplified it.
Now, exactly. So there's no need to reinvent. Mm-hmm.
And the fourth program, the one that we will complete in July, I know a lot about it now. I can't give you figures. I can't give you rate of return. It will be enormous, and I'm not talking about day trading. I'm talking about investments that take, on average, about 5.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very laid back. You know, it's for people who want to do other things and pore over their investments.
Mm-hmm.
You see, most people don't want to sit in front of a computer and study stocks, and that's not their interest, and why should it be? You know, so we've tried to take care of those people. This particular program,
so Sydney,
I'm going to...
I want to ask you a question here. Before, stick up in so you don't forget your thought there. So even the ones that are automated, the people who invest in those, they do not have to keep regular track of it. It's kept for them.
Exactly.
So
they need to look. They need to look every weekend when the data is updated, every weekend to see what instructions they need to give to the broker, and we spell those instructions out.
Okay.
That's all.
Got it.
All they need to do is call the broker.
Wow.
They have to choose the stocks, but we give them some. We won't tell them what stocks. We're not allowed to. We're not registered to do that. But we tell people how to do it for themselves. And frankly, you know, most investors spend an inordinate amount of time studying which stock to invest in next. You know, I'm going to tell you something that's going to shock you a little bit. Frankly, as long as you follow a certain formula that we give you, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because one of the things you cannot do is pick the best stock that there is to choose. You know, we all try, but you can't do it. If you do, it's by luck, and you won't do it again in your lifetime. So it really doesn't matter. What does matter is diversification, so that you pick different industries, and I would have you pick 10 different stocks from different industries.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm asking for you to do is be average. And when I say that, people sort of wrinkle their nose and who wants to be average?
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot beat, you cannot get 100% if the market goes up 20%.
Oh, okay.
Unless, and I should rephrase that. Because you can if you pick the right stocks. And the market goes, the average goes up 20% and you can have 100%. But when I'm speaking numbers, we cover in the United States more than 3,000 stocks. So I'm talking averages again.
Okay.
We have stocks that go up, you know, more than 1,000-fold. occasionally, they exist. You know, it's nothing we do. But the average is what I'm talking about.
For want of a better term, those ordinary people don't know about those stocks. Those are just for the privileged and the extremely wealthy, right?
No, not at all. They are stocks that will surprise everybody. You know, there's a restaurant chain, and I've forgotten the name of it now. It's a Mexican restaurant chain that has huge numbers. But who would have known in the beginning, except perhaps some insiders, some people close to the company? It's almost a luck of the draw. Almost. So trying to pick those stocks is, we all do it, but it's not really a winning thing to do.
It's not the safest way.
Here's the way that our systems make money. We buy very low, very low. And I'll tell you about the fourth program in a little while, because it's one that none of your listeners are going to believe. And I expect to be a laughing stock, and that's fine because I know what it's going to do. We buy low, we sell high, and we stay out of the market when it's going down. And that's where we make the money, because we get the benefit of the rise and we avoid the fall. So on the way up, if we have 10 stocks from 10 different industries, we'll be somewhere close to the market average. And the market, I don't know the latest figures, but recently the market was up 150% since March of 2009. 150%.
Wow.
But what happens is there'll be a downturn, and much of that will be given back. And this is why one of the reasons people don't make the sort of returns that we do. They get stuck too late in the bear market, get out in a panic near the bottom, and they bought too late in the first place. So those are the problems.
As I listen to you here, and, you know, I'm not a financier. I'm just a novice here. I was just so wooed when you and I started that conversation. And I said, if I am finding value in it, I know other of my listeners are finding value in it. Stocks sounds to be the safest way for us to invest versus bonds and the other things?
The St. Louis Federal Reserve has some statistics about stocks, treasury bills, and 10-year bonds, 10-year government bonds. They assumed that in 1928, at the very top of the market before the Depression, they put $100 into each one of those assets. $100 into stocks through one of the, following the index, not individual stocks, into government 10-year bonds and into 90-day treasury bills. And that $100 was not added to, it was just left alone. Now, I'm going from a very hazy memory here. The treasury bills, and this was in 2008, late in the Great Recession that we just went through. The treasury bills were worth around $1,600, up from 180 years before that. So if you deducted the tax that you would have paid on the gains and inflation, you, in fact, finish up with less than $100 of purchasing power. So treasury bills are fine for very short-term savings for a specific purpose. It's just like a bank account. You know, it's the same purpose.
Right.
You don't, it's not an investment as such.
Right.
It's a safe haven. Bonds had gone to, if I remember, something like $6,000. There may have been a slight increase in purchasing power when you take away inflation and taxation, but very slight. It was really a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Stocks were in excess of $100,000 from 100. And remember, we'd just come through the Great Recession, so they had come down over the last couple of years of that record keeping.
Mm-hmm.
So that proved conclusively that over time, stocks were the best investment.
Yes.
Go to another thing is real estate. I've forgotten his first name, Schiller, the man that co-authored the index for real estate that Standard & Poor's runs. He said that real estate was not a good investment. And he's talking about the buildings themselves, not the land.
Right, right.
He said, if it goes up in value, they'll just build more.
Mm-hmm.
And so he saw real estate, and this was before the bubble burst, as being a bad investment. So for my money, the investment, it has to be stocks, but under certain circumstances, under a system. One more thing about diversification. I've told you that, you know, I'd like to see people in 10 different industries, one stock in each industry or two stocks in each industry, whatever. But the other thing is this, an equal amount of money invested in each. Don't pick favorites because you'll always pick the wrong one. You know, just you have 9 chances in 10 of picking the wrong one. So those are two other things apart from having a system.
Yeah, that's good to know. That is good to know. So you spread it. For argument, if you have 1,000, you're going to spread. And I know that's not much. But you, instead of putting 500 in one and that, you put straight across because you never know which one is going to balance.
Exactly.
Wonderful,
exactly.
Wonderful.
Look,
you know, I want to pick
I'm looking at 10 stocks, I cannot pick the best one. And if I can't do it after 60 years, you know, it's very difficult for anybody else to do it.
No, I kind of understand when I'm at the gas station behind the people who is buying the lottery tickets. And they give that wad of money to the attendant. And they say, oh, just spread it out equal with everything. I say, okay, now I'm getting why they do that. But I want to piggyback, Sydney, on real estate a little bit. You know, there are so many seminars that's popping up all over the place and people, you know, putting their money out there, getting all this information about all this property and everything. And I said to a girlfriend of mine, I think these people are not making the money from the real estate as much as they are making the money from the 8 or 9 or 1,000 people that is sitting in that seminar and buying their products at the back of the room. And this is why we have to be so cautious, because there are so many people buying all this material and it's really not working for them. That's why they need to listen to information like you're giving here and get the right system.
Isn't it true there are always people who make money by talking about how to make money who haven't necessarily made it themselves?
They have not made it that way, but they tell you, and this is why I tell people, don't be looking for get rich quick things. You need the insight. You need the insight. You need the information. You need the knowledge. Spend the time to do your due diligence. Spend the time to do your due diligence because it is going to work. It's going to be worth it. I want to encourage the people from the chat room, call in 646-915-8166. And those of you who are listening on the telephone, I know you have questions, so call in, ask your questions. They are no silly questions, only the ones that have not been asked. So call in. Because this is our year of abundance and we got to start some investment. We want when next year comes, we start and say we are on our way of accomplishing something because we started. So let me hear from you. We have 39 minutes remaining in this conversation. Can you imagine, Sydney, where did the time go?
No. We could keep going for hours more. But Daphne, if I can say one thing, and it's this. Mm-hmm. I know that sometimes people are a bit shy to ask questions on the radio when so many other people are listening.
Yes.
I have a website, and people are most welcome to ask me questions there if they choose to do so. Can I give you the website?
Yes, go ahead. Say it slow. I'm going to type it in the in the chat room as well. But say it slow for people who are listening from.
The website, or one of them at least, is www.wealthyinvestorweekly.com. And I can be reached at Sydney, that's SYDNEY, like Australia, Sydney at wealthyinvestorweekly.com. And I do answer all emails.
Okay. All right. So we put the website out there, Wealthy Investor, and it's with a O-R, right, Sydney?
Wealthy Investor Weekly.com.
Oh, I put the wrong thing. I forget the weekly. Let me do it over, guys. All right. What I type, ignore what I just typed there. So it's Wealthy,
W-E-A-L-T-H-Y-I-N-V-E-S-T-O-R Weekly.
A-L-Y. It's the weekly,
yes.
I did not get.
I see, .com.
All right, so wealthyinvestorweekly.com. That's where you can go. And but we still want you to get involved in this conversation because you know what? The other listeners will not hear what your question is when you are sitting in private. So get involved here. We love when you get involved. So, Sydney, what to invest in 10 different industries using one of your systems? And I know whether your systems are just meant for big companies or entrepreneurs or whatever. So you can let us know. What for someone to start investing in like 10 different industries to make sure you cover the bases, what number should we look at to start that investment with?
It depends on which program you use. Let's
mm-hmm.
talk about the two extremes.
Mm-hmm.
With the bronze program, and I should tell you this, and we publish the results for the bronze program every weekend. And because of a change that's being made this week, the number is likely to increase.
Mm-hmm.
We average for more than 30 years, 35%, Daphne. Now, that is, for many people, that would be unbelievable. But we have enough proof. I mean, that's one of the things. And this is our worst program. This is our worst performing program. For that, I suggest that people should have, and I'm not rigid on this. I do this because I want to keep the cost in proportion to the gains. I don't want to take all the money that people gain. That's not what I'm in business for.
Okay.
I want my clients to be making good money for themselves, and that way they will stay with me for as long as it takes. So I suggest that they start with $20,000. Now, that's a lot of money for some people, a lot too much. I can tell people who don't have that how to save when they think they can't save. That was part of one of my books.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that one. The
All
other
right.
one, the fourth one, the Platinum Program.
Okay. Sydney, mm-hmm. All right. After you do the Platinum, you'll need to tell me the others because you mentioned four, but you did not list them.
Well, I really, and we haven't brought these to the public yet, and there's a reason for that.
Okay.
There's a reason we haven't.
Understood.
Let me tell you why we haven't made them public yet. It's because we are late in this rising market. Our investments average about 5.5 years. If somebody started now, they'd be joining, and some will. They will be joining existing investments. They won't run the full 5 years because there's going to be a bear market, and it's going to be a falling market, and it's going to be a nasty one. And I want my people to avoid that. So that's why we've held up publication of them. For the time being.
Okay.
Our coaching people will get free access to the appropriate program for their level of coaching until, in fact, we've been through the next bear market and they have been able to put together their own portfolio. Free access. And that, I think, is a fair way of doing it. In the interim, they can join existing investments partway through and still avoid the next downturn. That's the way we're setting it up. It's a bit of a problem as a company, but, you know, that's the right thing to do.
And this is for the Platinum or for the other three?
I've spoken about four. But we may, in fact, hold two back.
Right.
We will. There is the Platinum program. A very few people may get to use the Platinum program, and I'll tell you why. A few.
Okay.
It is so. It is so unbelievable, and that's a good word to use for it. That the only way we think we can market it as a small company, as a small, basically unknown company, is to market it through the investment industry.
They will
understand the program. They have clients already. They will be able to give those clients the advantage of this program, where we would just tickle the surface. But let me tell you why the program is, we think, too big for us to market directly, other than to a small number of coaching programs, their people. It buys 2 weeks, not 3 weeks, not 1 week, 2 weeks after the absolute low of the stock that you're looking at, the absolute low in a falling market, 2 weeks after that week in which that low occurs. This program buys. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It actually does that. And that is typically at the height of a recession when nobody wants to touch stocks with a 10-foot pole.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one side. The other side, and it gets out somewhere close to the top, I haven't got it so that it gets out 2 weeks before the top. And I don't think that's going to be possible to do. But we get out very close to the top. So we've got the full run of any rise in the market. And it's you can't get better than that. And I am overawed by what has happened here. And I tell you, this was a set of coincidences. A lot of brilliant people, mathematicians and programming type people in the investment industry, really brilliant people. And the investment industry has been around for hundreds of years. And nobody yet has come up with something that does what this program does. So it's rather, I don't really know how to describe my own feelings about it, except that I'm very excited, of course. But I am humbled by it. The other thing that it does, and this is, as far as I can tell, before we do the thorough testing, is going to be 100% accurate. It makes money on the way down. And I believe we're going to be, if not 100% right, very close to it. I think we're going to be very close to it both ways. You see, when you're looking at averages, you normally have losses in there too that bring the averages down. Well, I'm not sure we're going to have too many losses. But I don't know until we test. I know a lot of what we're going to see. And as a reason for me saying I think we're going to be close to 100%, I put together some, call them jigsaw puzzle pieces from the other programs. And I'm able to predict a whole bunch of things. I can't tell you the rate of return. It will be very high. And it's very safe, too, what we're doing. Our average loss, I've talked about an average gain of our worst program at 35%. Our average loss is a little less than 5.5%. And one more thing, which is another thing that investors will find difficult to believe. We are right more with that program more than 85% of the time.
I'm going to ask you a question here because I've just been led to ask. I listened to this entire conversation and you kept saying, you know, I'm nobody special. And I'm saying, you know,
I'm an ordinary person.
This gentleman is coming up with these phenomenal systems and everything for a long time. And you have spent a lot of time in the industry. Do you feel in any way that this information is divinely directed through you to pass on to us?
Daphne, you should know that I do. I have a reason for doing what I do. Look, at 80, money isn't terribly important to me anymore. If I could do this when I was 50, then I would have been as greedy as anybody else. You know, I would have been interested in the money. I would like a little bit more, that's sure. But there's a reason I do what I do. I realized a way back, and I don't normally talk about this, but I realized that there were too many things happening that were accidents or coincidences in quotes, that there was some, that God was directing it, and that I'm just a tool. I didn't know why, and I didn't know why for some months, but I knew that eventually it would be revealed to me if I had patience. And one day I saw an ad on television, and, you know, we see lots of ads and they mean nothing much to us. But this ad hit me right between the eyes. And in my belief, and I don't know whether it is accurate or not, this was a message. And the ad was for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, a cancer hospital for children. They don't charge the parents 1 cent. But they live, I guess the government will pay them some money, but they live on contributions.
Yes.
It costs $1.8 million right now to run that hospital for one day.
Mm.
My objective is this. I want to be able to support that hospital for one day in perpetuity forever, and adjusted for inflation. So we're talking north of $2 million a year and rising all the time. I want to be able to do that. And I say I want, because I don't know if it is my want or if it is, you know, God doesn't send telegrams. I do know this, that it is something that is good and that he would appreciate. And so that is what drives me. That's what makes me work 18 hours a day, and I have done for more than 4 years. I have no life. I'm in front of a computer and working all this stuff out.
Listen, Daddy didn't allow you to celebrate 80 for any reason. He have you here for a reason. Well, guess what, Sydney? We have a question from the chat room. Yay! Hello, hello, Sydney. Did you hear about the CRYTO? And it's CRYPTO, crypto. I'm going to spell them. I don't want to mispronounce. Currencies like Bitcoin, BITCOIN, etc.
Oh, yeah.
If yes,
I've heard of it.
Please tell, what do you think about it? That's very volatile right now and unstable. What do you think? Can your system handle such movements?
It can handle volatility, but it doesn't handle bitcoins. I pay no attention to bitcoins. It might be a reality. It might be real. But there's another thing I should say now. I never comment on even individual stocks. My own idea about what a stock, or in this case a bitcoin, will do has no more value than anyone else's opinion. Mm-hmm. And it's back to what I was saying about analysts and other people with degrees a mile long, or with no degrees, whatever. They are all guesses. None of us can see the future. So for me to say that a Bitcoin is going to go up or down or sideways, you know, is only a guess. And I'm the same way with stocks. You give me Bank America or any other well-known stock. I can look at the system and know what the system's doing, but my opinion is worthless.
Yes. All right.
Like I said, okay. Regardless of what you're saying, Daphne, like I said, I'm a very ordinary person.
Mm-hmm. Let me find out if there's an additional that help you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm so glad there's somebody in my chat that knows about investment here. We have 21
minutes.
No, that's all right. I'm sure. I'm asking whether that answer helped. I'm waiting on the person.
Mm-hmm.
To reply. We have 20 minutes remaining, and I tell you, I know Sydney and I can continue here for another 3 months, just like talking. It is so comfortable talking with you here, and you know, I there's so much I need to learn from you. Maybe this person probably is at work. They're not answering yet, so sometimes my listeners sign on at work, so they kind of multitasking. So you can still call in with your questions. We have another 20 minutes remaining,
And Daphne, if there are subsequent questions after the show is over and they come in to you, by all means, pass them on to me. I'll answer everybody.
I know. I will certainly do that, my friend. So, is there anything else that you want to mention that we did not yet cover, Sydney? We can start heading that direction.
Well, I'm never good with open-ended questions like that. I mean, where do I choose, you know? Relative to investing, the most important part, in my belief, I mean, there are lots of bits, there are lots of pieces, but the most important part is the management of investment, not just the investing. Investing is easy. You put some money down and you say, you point at something or however you choose it, you say, I'll put some money in that and it's done. You just sell. You say, sell, and it's done in microseconds. That's the easy bit. It's maybe not easy on the – it's very difficult emotionally. Selling is five times more difficult than buying emotionally because if you're investing by the seat of your pants, you don't know whether you should hold on for a little bit longer or, if you don't know what the future is. So it's very hard on the psyche. But the important part really is the management, and more important even than that, and that is really part of the management, is having a system. And there are lots of them. I mean, just the fact that we have, as far as we can tell, the best systems in the world is one thing, but that's advertising. There are lots of other systems that work with varying degrees of reliability. For example, there is a thing called a moving average crossover, where you calculate daily the average over two periods of time, and you draw a line to represent those averages on a chart. And when they cross one over another, say a 50-day average against a 20-day average, when they cross, it is often a signal to either buy or to sell. Now, that's a system, and it's a very common one, and it works. It sometimes gets caught up in more active than it needs to be. There are longer averages where you can use 2 years and something shorter than that, which will be less active. But they require that you do calculations and, add a day today and take a day off at the beginning. And, it's a little complicated, but it works. There are lots of things that work, Daphne.
Wow, you have to know. I tell you something. If my friend Clive was still alive, he would be having a field day with you, because this was up his alley. He passed on, 3 years ago. And, he was in his element when he gets into conversation like this. Okay, there's an answer here. Let me read what the reply is from the person that asked the question. They're still typing. I ask whether or not this your answer helped. Pretty much, I understand that nobody basically can comment about the future. That's silly. You can guess, but not more. Where are we? Not more than I. I'm not asking that. I just wanted to ask. Next, for example, you obviously look and examine charts. And so do Do you aware of Bitcoin charts? Can your system handle that? What do you think? Can your system handle the Bitcoin charts?
My answer to that is we don't follow Bitcoin.
Okay.
Could we follow it? I doubt it. And
okay.
I tell you why. Mm-hmm. A stock follows the economic cycle. In other words, there are good times in the economy and there are bad times. And stocks follow that. There's a rhythm. Rhythm is the right word for it. There's a rhythm to stocks. To bitcoins, Bitcoin, as far as what little I know about it, is a speculation.
Okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with the economy, as far as I know. And I don't know very much about it, because
right.
I haven't been interested.
All right. So that's a fair answer, I think. Yeah. Because you acquire knowledge from where you invest time, and you haven't invested much time from there. So,
Bitcoin is something new, and
okay.
I really don't understand the people who, and this is an exact quote, mine bitcoins. The people who somehow or other manufacture them. It seems a little bit like tulip bulbs in the 1600s in Holland, where
okay.
they were speculating on tulip bulbs and getting them to ridiculous prices until
uh-huh.
a sailor came along and said, well, what's the purpose of this? And the whole thing collapsed. I don't know what bitcoins are going to do.
Okay.
I know some stores are accepting them now, some major stores. But to me, it's a gamble.
All right. Okay.
And I don't like gambling.
That's right. Well, I'm glad you are my friend. You'll keep me out of the gambling lane. Well, Sydney, my friend, I tell you, we are down to 12 minutes, Sydney. Can you imagine? We are down to 12 minutes out of these 2 hours. The person in the chat room is writing. And,
I hope I've been able to interest people and not bore them to death.
Well, listen, somebody in here is writing, the person says, oh, thank you very much, Sydney. That means if it's only one person, let me thank them. Thank you for coming. Thank you for...
Well, I appreciate this person's time.
And they are hearing you, Sydney, so you can tell them.
Well, I appreciate your time, and if there's anything I can do to help you, I'd be glad to do so.
I want you to repeat your email, Sydney, and website again. I tell you, all of takes place because this goes on iTunes, and people will be downloading this because I'm going to make sure I feature this conversation. That means it goes on the front page, so people will be downloading this like wildfire. So,
well, I hope they will, and I hope it will help Daphne.
Oh yes, it's going to help me, and I know it's helping this other people there that was asking the question. So would you please, my friend, repeat your phone, your email and your website for them?
Well, the website is www.wealthyinvestorweekly.com, and my email is Sydney, Sydney, at wealthyinvestorweekly.com.
All right. Well, we have 10 minutes remaining, Sydney. What would your closing words be today, my friend?
Well, there are a lot of people who wouldn't have money to invest in anything, really, who think that they can't save. So let me tell you a little story. about a woman who came into my office some years ago. She was a small woman and nervous like a sparrow, and she was in debt, badly in debt. She was afraid she was going to lose her marriage. She was on her lunch hour from a job as a legal secretary, and she had to cross the harbor from Halifax to Dartmouth, that's in Nova Scotia in Canada, to get back to work. So she was very nervous. She had very little time. And she wanted to know how she could basically rescue her life. And she had no money. She was not, she was never going to be a client of mine. She just wasn't able to be that. So I had some little black notebooks in my drawer, and I handed her two. And I said, look, I want you, and I'll explain how this came about in a minute. I want you to list every single penny that you spend, whether it's 25 cents or whatever they are today in parking meters. You know, put it down, everything. And I want your husband to do the same thing for 1 month. And at the end of the month, I want you to look at the list, and I want you to cross out everything that you absolutely have to pay, the mortgage or the rent or whatever it was, your car payment, the bank payment, all of those things you have to pay, plus essential food. Now, that meant listing groceries by item, not just as one lump groceries. So everything that is essential that you spend, cross it off the list. Now, in theory, you could save the rest, but that's not really practical. It wouldn't last very long. You'd give up. So now I want you to cross off everything that is important to your lifestyle. Whatever that is, it's your life. Cross off the things that are important to your lifestyle. You then are going to be left with a small list, which you have basically said you don't need, that is not important to you. Whatever that is, next month, put that aside, go get it put aside automatically if you can, from your paycheck into a special account in the bank or in a mutual fund. I don't care what you put it into as long as it's something safe. And most people find, after having said they've got no money to save, they probably are able to save a couple of $100 a month. And that, to them, that's a huge surprise. This woman was buying a takeout coffee on her way to work every morning. In the middle of the morning, she'd take a break and have another coffee. At lunch, she'd have a couple of them. In the afternoon, she'd have another break. And on the way home, she'd buy another one. So about six cups of coffee every day. And I don't know if she had bagels or whatever else with them. But mm-hmm. six cups of coffee a day. And you add that up to, at today's cost. I don't care where you get the coffee from.
That's right.
Add that up. That's a significant amount of money. So I said, mm-hmm. look, take that money and start paying down credit cards with a high interest. Mm-hmm. And for the coffee, since obviously it was an addiction, the place that you're buying the coffee from has cans of their coffee. Make it at home. Get a thermos, and mm-hmm. make your own coffee at home. You mm-hmm. still have your coffee, but it doesn't cost you $200 or whatever it is a month. I don't know what she did. My one disappointment about that was she never came back to tell me how she made out. But I hope it was, satisfactory for her. Anybody can do that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Sydney, my friend, thank you so much. This was such an amazing note to close on, you know. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for who you are. And thank you for allowing yourself to be used. And, you know, you are going to accomplish everything that you are being, you know, called to do. And, again, it's such an honor to call you friend. It's as if I've known you for my lifetime, and it's just such a privilege to have you on this show this morning.
I have a smile on my face, Steph.
Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. And, you know, I'm going to be calling you when I get off the air because we got some stuff to talk about that came out of this show. Oh, well, Sydney.
I hope that your listeners got a lot of value from it and that I didn't bore too many people.
I hope so, my friend, because we're going to have you back here to talk about other stuff. And listen, thanks to the people on the phone, in the chat room and everything. Those of you who are listening, please tweet this episode. Share it with all people because this is the year that we need to start to invest with knowledge and insight. And did you get it here? It doesn't matter where you started. It really doesn't matter. The important thing is that you make the decision to start over now. And yes.
I would say not this is the year to start investing. This is the year to start finding out how to do it.
That's right.
This could be a very dangerous year.
Thank you.
I want people to avoid the danger.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So this is the year to acquire the insight, the information and knowledge in what you need to do. You see, I'm so glad that I hung with the smart guys. He was able to nudge me back in the right decision. Because, guys, this episode was not just for you. It's for me, too. And, you know, we are on this journey together. So I want, for those of you in here, Connecticut, please remain safe. Stay out of all the ice and everything. Be safe. I love each and every one of you. Thanks for your investment of time in listening. And please share this episode with others. And remember, you're called for a destiny. Don't allow anyone to tell you otherwise. Live your dream and follow your destiny. Thank you, Sydney, and I'll be talking with you in a few.
Thank you, Daphne.
Hallelujah. to my destiny. I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord thank you for showing me. Hallelujah. And directing me. Speak to it. My destiny. Come on, you declare it to the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. I speak purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with this place. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with this place. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. See the breaking of day. It's destiny. That I know what I know what I know what I'm here for. Yeah. Oh, for showing me to the Lord tonight and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. A strong God. You may not be able to touch it right now. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Hallelujah. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Everybody, you're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.